Track This Thread, Chapter 4. Once Banner, Stark, and Rogers concluded their three-way pissing match about, it figures that Fury would lie. Of course Fury would lie. He's a monster. I bet that eye patch isn't even real. And, this is too terrible to lie about. Would he really lie about something like this? For so long? All that's really left to do is something. Anything. Realistically, we don't have enough information to go on, Banner says, because even though he once wrecked Clint's long weekend by turning into a giant rage monster and destroying Harlem, he's still the most reasonable person at the table. Tony looks mulish. Are you casting aspersions upon Jarvis's analysis? Because I really thought we had something going here, Jolly Green. Oh God, don't say that, Banner says. At the same time, Roger sighs. I learned from you guys suspicions about S.H.I.E.L.D. are generally worth pursuing. The question is, how? Natasha, who has spent as many years working for S.H.I.E.L.D. as she worked against it, says, Fury doesn't keep any of his most sensitive files on networked hard drives. Fury doesn't keep any of his most sensitive files digitally. They're in the White Plains administrative offices, Clint mumbles, feels it tumbling out of his mouth without thinking about it. And then, when everybody stares at him with a question hanging in the air, he stutters, Coulson used to tell me stuff. Banner's eyebrows are nearly at his hairline. About what I'm assuming is incredibly classified S.H.I.E.L.D. infrastructure and procedure? There's a whole backstory here, about how years into Clint's tenure at S.H.I.E.L.D., he was still barely fitting in, and clinging onto his authorization by the skin of his teeth and the expedience of his aim. And how getting transferred under Phil Coulson's supervision had felt like just another chapter in Clint's epic fuck-up of an existence. Until 6 months into the gig, Coulson had looked at him thoughtfully and said, I'm violently allergic to sulfa drugs. If you slip me some, I'd slip into anaphylaxis and die without immediate medical treatment. Sir? Clint had asked, because it was not an exaggeration to say the location of some of Coulson's offices at various S.H.I.E.L.D. locations were classified, much less medical shit. I trust you, had been Coulson's reply, said without hesitation, inflection, or doubt. I trust you, and I trust I can tell you things. It's how Clint knows about most of the stuff he knows about, and everything he shouldn't know about at all. Coulson used to drop these random secrets on him, like river stones, weighing him down so he wouldn't come untethered. Clint's never thought he was one for being tied down, but this wasn't handcuffs or unwanted debts. This was Coulson telling Clint something that could get Coulson killed. That could bring S.H.I.E.L.D. down from the inside out. And where it should have been terrifying, the pressure had made it easier to breathe. And Coulson had told him this bullshit about Nick Fury's frankly insane file system while they'd been huddled together in a hijacked IMF supply car. Anybody who successfully hijacked a S.H.I.E.L.D. supply car would find clean clothes, MREs, bottled water, some knives, a comm station, a surprisingly robust field medical kit, and probably a bunch of dog-eared old romance novels, which it is unspoken S.H.I.E.L.D. policy to leave behind for the next unfortunate fucks to drop by. IMF supply cars are apparently kitted out with a lot of guns and nothing of practical use, which had been just excellent. Why would a soaking wet and ravenous Clint Barton and Phil Coulson need warm clothes, food, or the ability to radio for help when you could have all the comforts of a fucking survivalist army bunker? When they'd finally crossed out of Belarus into Poland, Coulson had already started writing an angry letter to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s IMF liaison, using a pilfered Sharpie and Clint's arms. Here, now, away from the freezing metal of the subway car, rattling around Eastern Europe, Clint suddenly, stupidly, remembers how Coulson wrote his lowercase J's. Expansive, the soft line of the permanent marker licking across the thin skin and blue veins in the crook of Clint's elbow. his mouth goes dry. Why he knows this isn't really relevant so much as if this is still true, Natasha butts in, because she's wonderful. Because she's also fucking awful, she adds. We can talk about the incredibly inappropriate asset-handler relationship they cultivated later, if you want. Stark looks orgasmic. Fuck yes! Do you think you'd be able to get us access to Fury's files, Agent Barton? Roger says, out of clear desperation to get the entire conversation back on track. Me? No, Clint says, because he assumes that when S.H.I.E.L.D. removed all of his punitive trackers, they implanted additional punitive trackers. I could tell you where I last knew them to be, but it could be just part of the stash, not the whole thing. Banner looks thoughtful. It'd be a start, but we should really look for a digital footprint otherwise, too. I read the official report. The official report is 600 single-spaced pages long. There's a 10-page entry for Barton, Clinton Francis, and the separate index volume. And if Agent Coulson actually survived the attack, then there would have needed to be extensive follow-up. And wow! Bruce marvels, stopping himself. Now that I've actually said it, this all sounds completely dumb. That lands like a brick in the room. Hey, chuckles, Jarvis does not make mistakes, Stark retorts. He's not wrong, Stark, Roger says, in a measured tone that makes Clint want to rip his hair out. Then Rogers makes it worse by looking, just for a beat, over at Clint, at what must be the most exposed and embarrassed and horrible expression Clint's ever worn. Then Steve asks, Tony, no ego, no aspersions on Jarvis, could this just be a coincidence? To Clint, it sounds like, do we really want to open this wound? Stark sets his jaw, squares it in a way that Clint knows from his years as a dumb kid, reads his anger in the body language of powerful adult white males. It took decades to mute his reflex response to it, mostly because they kept changing. Little, he shut down, got quiet, waited for the fallout with all his muscles tense. Less little, he hit first. Agent Clint Barton, specialist, waits for field orders before taking further operational action, insofar as it's reasonable, given current circumstances and available recourse. Agent left a stupendously embarrassing wealth of primary source material for Jarvis to source, Stark says, finally, glowering, talking at 100 miles an hour. The algorithm he devised from a randomly selected group of 1,000 posts on the Captain America One Hand on the Keyboard forum identified his post to a 99.78% accuracy so far as I can tell. This bus monitor ass clown has only made a few dozen posts. Not a lot to go on, but the overlap with the algorithm was higher than 50% in more than 80% of the posts. That's not a coincidence. That's something rotten in your helicopter boat parking lot. Rogers is glaring. We get it, Tony. Fine. It's not fine, Stark yells, sounding on the edge of frantic. It's totally not fine. It is so not fine. I want to know if he's actually dead, because Fury threw blood-soaked vintage cards of your goober face at me, and I almost died in an interdimensional rift. And after that horrible fucking memorial with all of Agent's cape-wearing, Cheeto-eating friends, I drank white wine spritzers at an Olive Garden with Pepper because she was so sad and just wanted their fucking soup and salad deal for lunch. I went to an Olive Garden! Clint's used to crazy people. They have a certain frenetic pattern that's soothing after the circus and shooting people for money, and then shooting people for shittier government money. Tony is recognizably crazy people. Every inch of him is freaking out. His $500 haircut to his almost high-heeled sneakers. It is a strange animal comfort to know that Clint's not alone here, standing neck deep in an emotional tar pit and losing it. Because Wise Ass is bone deep, not something anybody's ever been able to punch out of him, Clint asks, Did you go to the one in Times Square? Pained, Tony says, yes. Clint looks at Natasha. That's pretty bad. Natasha looks back at him with something akin to wonder on her face. Natasha looks at infomercials for microwave bacon cooking devices, antique katanas, and news about the weird acid attack at the Russian ballet with wonder on her face. Right now, Clint's not comfortable being in that mix, but her expression isn't angry or impatient. Instead of agreeing with the factual statement that drinking white wine spritzers at the Times Square's Olive Garden is pretty fucking terrible, Natasha keeps her eyes on Clint and says to the group, "So, we should proceed with a fact-finding mission."
"Yes, for fuck's sake, let's do that," Tony says.
Natasha nods, mostly to herself. "Clint can brief us," she says, and points at Rogers. "You're coming with me." Steve's face is appropriate in pallor at that. If Clint wasn't such a fucking train wreck right now, he'd probably clap Rogers on the shoulder and say, "Wear a cup, buddy." And it is completely, utterly fucking shocking to realize that he has said it out loud, and that, as a result, Captain America is making a face at him.
"Thanks, Barton. Really," Rogers says.
"I'm not joking about the cup, man," Clint tells him. Holy fuck. It feels like a boulder in his throat has rolled away. He gets to enjoy that for maybe 2 seconds, before Nat punches him in the fucking arm hard enough to leave a mark, as if she isn't just underlining his original point. The back office runs out of a series of leased floors sandwiched between similar operations for almost every major bank headquartered or significantly represented in New York, and a fuckload of law firms. S.H.I.E.L.D. can't exactly run payroll through ordinary federal channels without enough scrubbing to be a fucking mob operation. As a result, S.H.I.E.L.D. administration, payroll, and human resources are all housed under a spinoff 2 shell corporations away from S.H.I.E.L.D. Logistics, a limited liability in which various defense and intelligence agencies own minority stakes in really complicated and boring ways that all boil down to the hilarious fact that Clint's paychecks come from, no fucking joke, Heraldry Roofing Inc. Natasha's roll-in from Custom Coats of Arms LP. Agent Foster's entire work team gets W-2s from an Arby's franchise, because at that point, payroll was getting bored and increasingly weird. Which just means that everybody who's part of S.H.I.E.L.D. is in on the secret, and that infiltrating offices in White Plains, a bustling hub of affluent Westchester that rolls up its sidewalks at 6 p.m. every night, is every fucking bit as dangerous as trying to break into the helicarrier. Late-night security at White Plains is actually higher than at a lot of other bases, Nat is explaining while sharpening a knife. Stark appears to be torn between horror and erotic fixation, staring at the blade. It's hilarious. The Triskelion and the Hub are its people and its tech, all of which move around a lot. White Plains could be wiped. Steve frowns, and Clint says, "Seriously, don't ask," because he doesn't want to have to tell Captain America that the backup plan of the backup plan of the backup plan involves imploding an agency facility while still fully staffed. And it would still be an operational hazard because of all the information that gets stored about S.H.I.E.L.D. operations, assets, and employees, Natasha concludes. The night detail patrols every 15 minutes, and file rooms and offices are equipped with motion-activated sensors. If the file rooms are anything like Midtown, then they can be hermetically sealed, too. Nick Fury's secret files are somewhere in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s historical archives, tucked away in deteriorating boxes between 1982 and 1986. They're hard copy, the only copies, and they're covered in Fury's hand, in Coulson's sweeping print, in Maria Hill's editorial drawings. Looking into those boxes is one of the things that gets you a bullet neatly between the eyes, execution style. Looking like he already regrets it, Steve asks, hermetically sealed because? Sleeping gas, nerve gas, Nat says offhand. You know, whatever. Bruce sighs, like he wishes he was back in whatever hellhole Natasha found him before the Chitauri and Stark's invasive species friendship. I'll go see if I can upgrade some gas masks, he says, profound in his sadness, slinking away. You know the facility, you know S.H.I.E.L.D. We follow your lead, Rogers tells Natasha, with focus forged in the trials of war, or whatever. And Clint can, theoretically, see himself really liking the guy if he wasn't 100% sure Coulson's jerked off to this dude's old newsreels before. Natasha just nods approvingly at Steve. Meet me here at 2 a.m. And pausing long enough to look Captain America up and down and find him wanting, adds, and don't dress like that. Wow, Tony interrupts here, making finger guns at Steve and Nat because he has no sense of self-preservation. While you two crazy kids go on what, frankly, sounds like a pretty spectacular first date, let me tell you, I'm going to see what me and Jarvis can coax out of S.H.I.E.L.D. computers. Clint asks, what the hell am I doing during all of this? Before he can stop himself. It turns out what he's doing is sitting around Stark's lab, freaking the fuck out. Despite all the mean stuff Sitwell likes to say about him, Clint's a professional. Natasha and him might be weirdly codependent work spouses, but he trusts her to stay safe and do what she needs to do. Even if what she needs to do right now is break into a high-level S.H.I.E.L.D. facility. At least she has Captain America with her, which is a comfort, because if there are any explosions or people try to shoot her, Clint assumes Natasha will just hurl Steve at the assailants like a blonde bowling ball and make a break for it. And that's great, really great, because Steve seems like a really solid superhuman S.H.I.E.L.D. or projectile. But it doesn't address the issue of Clint trapped here, sitting on his hands, jogging his knees at different rates out of sheer, crippling nerves. Barton, Stark tells him, eyes still fixed on the hovering display in front of him, fingers flying across an antique-looking keyboard. If you don't stop twitching, I swear to God, I will have dummy... Across the lab, one of Stark's robots perked at this. Roll over here and stab you with a tranquilizer. Am I being clear? Clint ignores the threat to ask, did you find anything yet? Weirdly, your super-secret spy club has reasonable, come near-competent firewalls, Tony answers, distracted. They've beefed up security since the last time I hacked them. Even as Clint says, is there anything I could help with? He knows it's fucking pointless, because the sum total of Clint's relationship with technology can be wrapped up in how he has to call people he used to sleep with spelling questions, because he forgot he has, like, 4 S.H.I.E.L.D. issue tablets. And an iPad. And that horrible thing Stark gave him. Tony eyes him. What? Does your keen and asshole-ish eye for UX also translate into being a whiz at breaking encryption? I meant, like, do you need clues for passwords and stuff? Clint snaps, face hot. He watches movies. This is less passwords. I am a genius at, well, everything, but especially passwords, Stark declares, all bland self-congratulation, turning back to the floating monitors and their floating numbers, the black window and blue text that's worse than Greek to Clint, because Clint can order beer and ask where to get cheap condoms in Greek. Not his fault. But this shit is total chicken scratch. This is more like faking S.H.I.E.L.D.'s computers into thinking I'm allowed anywhere near their servers. Clint asks, what about computers that aren't S.H.I.E.L.D. computers that are allowed to see S.H.I.E.L.D. computers? That's cute, Greenleaf, but not... Tony's face, in the middle of the sentence, transformed from patronizing to interested.
Do you know of any computers that aren't SHIELD computers that are allowed to see SHIELD computers?
40 minutes later, Clint's cell phone starts ringing.
Clint, Pepper says when he picks up, why is Tony infiltrating the World Security Council?
Tony yells, it's easier than breaking straight away into SHIELD. And Clint parrots, apparently, it's easier than breaking straight into SHIELD. Because long years of getting his ass chewed out has taught him not to volunteer himself for blame when the consequences are unclear.
Where's Steve? Pepper asks. Or Natasha?
Clint says, because he is a fucking abysmal liar. On Delta, they had one spy, Nat, and one spook, Coulson, and they had one guy who hung around on top of buildings in hide sites because Clint's uselessness playing a character in the field was so legendary, Sitwell used to use him as an example in new agent training. On the line, Pepper makes a noise of pure frustration that sounds like 6 swear words smashed together before she hangs up on him.
She hung up, Clint says, at Tony and into the air of the lab, wondering. He's been hung up on by a lot of women in his life, but this one feels different and special somehow.
Tony ignores him in favor of yelling at the ceiling.
Jarvis, get the rest of the Spice Girls down here. I think I found something.
Steve Rogers is way, way too nice in America for Clint to harbor any crotch-related thoughts about the guy. But when he appears in Stark's lab, dressed in a black leather jacket, black jeans, and some busted-up combat boots, Clint feels momentarily erect and incredibly patriotic. Like, holy shit! Clint has no idea where Natasha got that t-shirt she's painted onto Rogers, but she could sell him on the internet right now and buy a Hawaiian island with the proceeds, be semi-Bond villain neighbors with Larry Ellison.
You found something? Rogers asks.
Tony ignores him to ask Natasha, are you shitting me with this?
She shrugs. It's my version of decorating a cubicle.
Stark found something, Clint cuts in, before she decides to tell Stark about how Clint lets her dress him up for funsies, too. Natasha, classy broad she is, never goes any higher brow than second-tier stripper.
Something in the money trail?
Tony waves his hands around, descriptive in their flapping.
Not the money trail. If it was the money trail, then that would be too easy.
He starts, and launches off into a monologue about the absence of irregularities in the money trail, and how the flawlessness of the record-keeping itself is suspicious, considering there are entire sections of SHIELD's operational budget that are just solid black redacted pages, even on their own internal servers. Tony conveys this information like he's always known it, like he's got a PhD in spec ops, and has been working at SHIELD since before someone figured out how to make their old name spell out SHIELD. 40 minutes ago, Clint was writing example shorthand for bribes, illegal weapons, drugs, hookers, and weird bribes on napkins from Rizzo's on top of a disintegrating pizza box, because those were some of the few items that weren't redacted. Just because SHIELD isn't inclined to provide the WSC and the DOD robust and comprehensive records, doesn't mean SHIELD doesn't need robust and comprehensive records for itself.
Rogers says, not that that isn't interesting, Stark.
Weird bribes, Stars and Stripes, Tony says. They have opcodes specifically for weird bribes.
Don't make me regret telling you this stuff, Clint says, already regretting telling Tony this stuff.
But more importantly, does this tell us anything? Rogers presses, undeterred. Stark's too old to make that face. Sulking isn't attractive on a man over 40.
It's a good sign, he says finally, grudging. because in the midst of absolute chaos, you wouldn't be this meticulous with your record keeping on boring garbage like computer seats and legal pads, unless you were trying to hide something much bigger. Because if you were going to fake a death, or keep someone in stasis, or engage in any other major medical intervention of the caliber needed, say, after being stabbed through the chest with an evil Asgardian staff, perchance, you'd need stuff. Lots of stuff. Doctors, Clint jumps in. He thinks he hears his voice crack a little. Surgeons. Specialists, Stark sweeps in. Other people and things and stuff. And hush money, due to which we went to a funeral and I went to an Olive Garden. Banner, shuffling into the room, clutching an armful of forbidding objects, announced himself by saying, "You know, the Olive Garden's not that bad." And then turns to Rogers and Natasha, adding, "I made you guys some gas masks, but I'm going to need someone who isn't shitty at welding to go over them again if we want to avoid the eventual equipment failure and death." "Oh," Stark coos. "Gimme, I want to try a thing. A new welder thingy I built." Clint turns to Natasha. He doesn't say, "I have regular gas masks back in Brooklyn," but she gets it because she gets him, grins and rubs their shoulders together. "So we're just operating on the assumption that something will go wrong and your bosses will try to gas us to death?" Rogers asks them, but not really asking. He also doesn't sound that worried about it, which Clint guesses makes sense. Anybody who had endured, had the fucking privilege of, long-term exposure to Coulson knows a lot about Roger's war history, which is only red, white, and bleeding eagle blue in grade school textbooks. Once you get the primary sources, shit gets interesting. There's a lot of newsreels and documentation, and in Steve Rogers may have beat the heart of an archetypal soldier, but that shit was hooked up to the brain of a total crazy person doing crazy things, fighting crazy people. Compared to Nazis who had transformed their faces into literal red skulls, what was a little poison gas, Clint guesses. In the background, Stark's trying to get what looks like one of those robot dogs to do mechanical work on the gas masks. This is slightly less crazy than it sounds on the outside, because Stark's apparently given the robot dog laser eyes. "That's usually how it goes, yeah," Nat says, leaning over a table and staring blatantly at the broad planes of Steve's chest. Steve, who is clearly used to people objectifying him, but completely unclear on how to react to it or how to feel about it, squirms. In the background, Stark's now yelling at one of his robots for overenthusiastic assistance, and Banner is wrapping another layer of duct tape around something. Clint grinds the heel of a hand into his eye socket. He keeps hearing Tony's whip-quick, "If the spear shredded his heart, there'd be no chance." And Banner's, "Reconstructive surgery has made leaps and bounds, and that's not even considering whatever shield is keeping hidden up its sleeve," and grits his teeth. Then Natasha's pressing a palm to the back of his neck, murmuring, "Hey." Clint's no good at lying to Nat. More than that, there's no point. So he just shakes his head and tries to make himself smaller, crush the same matter into a more finite space. "This is dangerous," he mumbles at her. "I'm pretty good at dangerous," she promises. "This is probably for bullshit, for nothing," Clint says. But the truth of it isn't enough to tamp down how desperately hopeful he feels, the weight's filling up his chest and making his knees and throat hurt. He wants so fucking badly. He wants comprehensively. He wants in that greedy way that makes people who are habitually poor buy flat-screen TVs on payday, because they know the money's going to be gone soon, that this is their singular opportunity. And he wants not to think about having to take it to the fucking pawn shop 2 weeks later. "Maybe," she concedes. "But maybe it's not." "If this isn't..."
I can't again, Nat, Clint chokes out. All the other stuff floating around them in the tension of his neck and the white grip of his hands. If this turns out to be a snipe hunt, wasted time. If at the end of Stark's digging and Natasha's infiltration, all they get are further confirmation that Coulson, Phil, PC is dead, that he's buried in Arlington with new grass lush green over him. Then what? Then Clint can be disproportionately fucked up all over again? He can stare at his ceilings and make Kate crazy with worry and Nat pace around him while he tries and fails fucking miserably to be sad the way he's supposed to be sad. The way you are about a good friend and a coworker. But the way his organs are tied up in knots aren't aligned with the paperwork and the actual history of the things. Clint has been to a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. funerals over the years, played honor guard to the casket, and stood in black suits over the shoulders of husbands and wives, partners and parents. He feels like those people do, when they're locking their knees so they can stand up, when they look like they want to fall into that hole in the ground along with whoever's gone ahead without them. The thing those S.H.I.E.L.D. hand-me-down romance novels neglected to mention is that the tearing, horrible crush of love isn't the result of two explosive agents coming into contact. It does not need two people to cause a fire. Clint is both the tinder and the spark. He's got the third-degree burns to prove it. He can feel it licking up his chest, down the muscles of his back, smoke filling up the room and making his eyes water. The fucking unfairness of it is making it hard to talk. If Clint is going to grieve like this, he should have gotten some promises while Coulson was alive. He should have gotten Coulson's flag at the service. He should have Coulson's house keys. He should have his effects. They should have had at least 5 years of a bed that smells like both of them. In the calculus of grief, all of the variables that mean Clint is here dying the way he's dying should translate into something different on the other side of the equal sign. Natasha knows this. As much as she can know something Clint can't bear to say out loud, anyway. So she presses a fierce, closed-mouthed kiss to his temple. She whispers, "We have to try." And then she's gone, off to collect one of Banner's gas masks and Captain America, calling, "We'll be radio silent once we're inside the facility," as they leave. Natasha and Steve come back blank-faced 6 hours later, barely looking out of breath. They hand Stark a thumb key, and when Tony throws the images up across the windows, the files and notes, the documentation, blurs the cityscape of New York behind it, the Chrysler building lights gleaming faintly through the schematics of a stealth plane.